Hey, when you and your buddies are looking for a place to watch baseball this season, how about Longneck Sports Grill? Each location has 4K TVs all over the place, so you'll never miss a pitch. The menu is so extensive that you can get something different every time you visit, and no place in Northern Kentucky has a better beer selection. There are locations in Wilder, Hebron, and Richwood, and when the weather is warm, there's nothing better than a spring night on Longneck's outdoor patio. This baseball season, Longneck Sports Grill. Stay late. Come often.
We are pleased to be joined by, I think I can safely say this on these airwaves, the best second baseman of all time. Hall of Famer, Reds Hall of Famer, Joe Morgan is joining us. And let's welcome in Joe now. How are you, sir?
I am good, but I'm ready for some baseball.
Boy, that makes all of us. Aren't we all?
Right.
Well, let's just jump right into it here, and I want to get your thoughts on this. I mean, you're like all of us. You're kind of sitting here on the outside. We're all just reading the articles. We're talking to as many people as we can, but it seems like most of the information is just coming from what we read. What is your take on all this, and you know, especially from a former player's perspective?
Well, I'd be a little hypocritical if I said that, you know, the guys, this was all bad, everybody was wrong. Because I went through a couple of strikes, I went through lockouts, I did stuff too. So I'm not as up to date as I was then. I was part of everything then. I wanted to know what was going on, so I kept myself informed, you know, through the Players Association, et cetera. Now I'm like you. I read the paper, I listen to the TV, and I see what's going on. One day it's great, next day I'm disheartened again. So I was glad to hear you say that the commissioner, I didn't see the Twitter, but him to say that there will be baseball. So, you know, I look forward to that.
Joe, the people that maybe you stay in contact with, is there optimism amongst the camp of people you talk to?
Yes, but there's been optimism, Jim, for the last couple of months, and we're still not there yet. Like I said, it'd be hypocritical for me to criticize the players or to criticize management, because I don't know what those numbers mean. Those are numbers I've never dealt with in my life. You know what I mean? 140 billion, 2 billion, you know. But, you know, by the same token, you know, it's bad for the game, you know, the way things are going right now. I just hope that, you know, we can get something settled, get on the field, and get some baseball in 2020.
Joe, there's a lot of things that have been discussed as far as rule changes and how this season might play out. I saw one, Joe Posnanski wrote an interesting article and almost kind of suggested setting up the season kind of like you would the College World Series, and or maybe at least the postseason,
no,
setting it up that way, which was an interesting.
I'll answer,
but,
no.
But are there things – there you go. That's a quick answer. But
no.
What are there some things that are being discussed that are thrown around?
Yeah, there are a lot of things being thrown around, and I think that's the problem. Look, this is professional baseball. This is not the College World Series. This is not the Final Four in March. This is professional baseball. Everybody's doing it for a profession. The players are using it, professional owners is part of their business. So it has to be treated as such. I don't think you can, you know, I don't know if that's the right term, jimmy-jack something up so that you can just put people on the field and put a tournament together. I don't believe in that. I believe that players, these players who are professionals, have worked their hard to get to there, and they deserve to, you know, be able to show their best, you know, their best skills. As we all know, a short tournament or something like that, it doesn't mean the best team's going to win. It doesn't mean anything. It just means that somebody, whoever gets hot that day, that's what's going to happen. I mean, if the Punisher hits two or three home runs every day, then the Reds would be in. You know, so things like that I don't agree with. I just think you have to treat it as professional baseball and force these two sides to come together and let's move forward.
So they talked about maybe experimenting with rules or a few different scenarios. Is there anything out there that you would like to see Major League Baseball in this time and the season of 2020 where it is a chance to maybe try some new things that you would be a proponent of?
The only thing I would be a proponent of is expanding the playoffs. You know, getting more teams involved, keeping more cities interested as we go down the stretch. Other than that, you know, I haven't given it a lot of thought, to be honest with you, Jim. Like I said, I've been doing exactly what you do. I read the paper every day. I watch all the telecasts, and I just try to figure out where we are and what we're going to end up doing. The thing that bothers me more is unfortunate that this year all this happens because, you know, I think the Reds, this is their best chance in the last few years to get to the playoffs.
Yeah.
And now, you know, we don't know what's going to happen. We could always say over 162 games that the best teams are going to be in the playoffs. If you have a short schedule, you don't know if the best teams are going to be in the playoffs.
Joe, I want to switch gears a little bit, and obviously a lot of Reds fans and Reds fans that are listening are very familiar with your career. But I do want to kind of talk a little bit about your time and what it was like, you know, reading about you and the trade when you came over from Houston. That was not something that at the time was very well received. Of course, in these days, in this day and age, you have social media. There's so much information that you can choose to ignore if you can, or read it if you choose. What was that whole process like for you? It obviously was, now looking back on, it's one of the greatest trades the Reds could have ever made. So what was that whole process like for you at that point?
Well, it's the second greatest thing that's happened to me, third greatest. My marriages and my kids are my first two. But I didn't want to come to Cincinnati. I mean, let's face it. I was in Houston. We had a lot of good players there, a lot of young players, and I thought we were going to become something special. But when they traded me there, and I have to tell you, my father, who's no longer with us, I wasn't happy because I wanted to stay in Houston, play with Jimmy Winn, was my roommate, play with all the guys, Rusty Staub, all the guys I'd come up with. And my dad said to me, now you have a chance to get in the World Series. And you know what? A bell went off in my head right that day. And from that point on, I was all in on the trade and anything that was going to happen after that. Look, if I was a Reds fan, I wouldn't have been as happy either. Look, Lee May, Tommy Helms, Jimmy Stewart, all these guys were leaving. These were people favored, people here. They were all good players. They had done well for the Reds. And so the fans were saying, who is Joe Morgan? You know what I mean? And who are these other guys that are coming with him? So it turned out, obviously, to be the best. The one thing I will say, although I know it wasn't a popular trade at the time, when I got here, the people, the fans, gave me a chance to prove who I was. They didn't put a lot of pressure on me when I got here. I had a chance to show that I deserved to be, you know, on a big red machine. I had a chance to get to know, I knew Pete better than anyone else. I got a chance to know Johnny, Tony, all the other guys. And all of a sudden, you know, this is where I belonged. That's the way I felt after a while.
Well, I want to get into that a little bit more. Do you have time to stick around for another few minutes?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm okay.
All right. Well, we'll be. All right, very good. Well, we'll be back with more with Joe Morgan. Coming up, you're listening to the Reds Hot Stove League, presented by the Holy Grail Banks, Budweiser, and UDF on the Reds Radio Network. Welcome back into the Reds Hot Stove League, presented by the Holy Grail Banks, Budweiser, and UDF. The Reds Hall of Fame and Museum, presented by Dinsmore, will reopen to the museum members on Saturday, June 13th. That is this Saturday, and to the public on Saturday, June 20th. Visit redsmuseum.org to plan your next visit. We're visiting with Hall of Famer Joe Morgan, and boy, it is a treat to have you on, Joe. Thanks so much for sticking around for another segment with us. And we're talking about you coming over from Houston. One thing that happened that, as the story goes, was a huge impact on your career, not just the trade, but once you got here, you were lockered next to Pete Rose. How much of an impact did that play on you and your career?
Well, it had a big impact on me and my career. Like I said, Pete I knew before I got here. But Sparky, let me back up. Sparky Anderson should get all the credit for all of this because Sparky was the one that told Bob Hausman and everybody what I could do for his lineup and why he wanted me here. And then when I got here, he lockered me next to Pete Rose. And, you know, that was just match made in heaven, so to speak. You know, I was there with Pete every day. We talked baseball every day, and we just pushed each other every single day. And so You know, Sparky, like I say, he deserves all this credit. But locking me next to Pete was great. He did two things. That was the first thing. He locked me next to Pete. And I didn't even tell anybody this story till after I retired. One day he called me into the office the first month right after toward the end of spring training. And he said, Joe, I'm never going to give you a sign. He said, you have proven to me that you know how to play this game and you're going to always do what's best for the team. And that was a twofold. It was a blessing, but it's kind of a crutch, too, because, you know, all of a sudden now, every time I walk to the plate, I've got to think about what's best for the team. I couldn't walk up there with a clear mind just to hit. I had to think what's best for the team. There were times I had to try to get a walk, times I had to try to do something else. But Sparky gave me that leeway. I always looked down at third base so the players wouldn't know. But only the two of us knew. I never told anybody. He may have told somebody, but I never told any of the players or anybody else that I was on my own. In fact, Pete criticized me one day. I bunted with a runner at first base in a tie game and the left-hander on the mound. And I came back in, man. He said, why did Sparky make you bunt? I said, man, it was the right thing to do, you know, or something like that. But, you know, I had such great support here from Pete, all the players, Johnny, all the players. And of course, from Sparky, so it was a perfect match for me.
Well, you made a few sacrifices in that regard, and I know one of them was stolen bases. You probably could have had more stolen bases because once you got on second base, you didn't try to steal third as much because you had guys hitting behind you to drive you in. But I know there was a time that you tried to steal home, which. What is Perez? Perez set you straight, right?
Yeah, that's an interesting story. We're in Chicago, and I don't know what happened. As they say, I had a brain lock, and I was on third base with two outs, and I took off for home, and I'm sitting there on home plate, and Tony Perez looks down at me, and he said, "Don't you ever do that again." He said, "I'm going to swing," and I looked up at him. I said, "Yes, sir," but the point was. When I was at second base, those guys could drive me in. And you have to remember this. As a base stealer, you can't just take. I couldn't just expect Bench, Perez, and all those guys to take pitches so I could steal bases. So there were times when I wouldn't steal, and I would tell them I wasn't going to steal. I'd say, pick a fastball out, man, hit it, and both of us come home together. And then there were times when the game is tied in the eighth inning or we're run down, I would ask them to take a pitch for me. And they always did it. And then I'd steal the base, and they'd drive me in. So that's how I became a hero.
Did you ever have instances, especially when you were at first, and you talk about it there a little bit, but were there times where guys would get frustrated with you as a distraction to the hitter when you were at first base?
No.
Maybe them not knowing whether or not you were going to go?
Not with those guys. Bench would hit behind me sometimes, and then, of course, Perez. I would tell them what I was going to do before I got on base. If we're one run down, I said, just give me the first pitch. If I don't steal on the first pitch, you go ahead and hit. And they always did that. And I would usually try to go on the first pitch. I did not want to take the bat out of their hand. I didn't want them to be hitting with two strikes, et cetera, et cetera. Look, we worked it perfectly. Everything worked out well for us, for me as a base stealer and them as the guys that drive in runs. I could have stolen – I don't know, 70, 80 bases every year if I was just out there running. But that wasn't my job. My job was to get on base, score runs for the team, get in scoring position, and those guys would drive me in. And it just worked out well that way. I remember a story years and years when I first came to the big leagues when Maury Wilt stole 104 bases or something. Him and Jim Gilliam weren't speaking at the end of the year because – it felt like he was just, you know, Gilliam never had time to hit. It was always Maury. And I was convinced and told myself I would never let that happen to me.
Joe, this has been an unusual year, to say the least. How have you been through all this, the quarantine and everything that's going on? Everything good in your world?
Everything's great in my world, except I'm like everybody else. I'm sheltered in place, and I'm, looking at the world differently now from the pandemic and also from the protests and everything that's going on. I say this in all honesty. Anybody that's lived in this country, in the last 100 years shouldn't be surprised about what's going on. You know, at some point, enough is enough, and I think we've reached that point. And not just in America, all around the world, I think people are looking at things differently, you know, at social injustice and everything else. And I just think that we're going to be a better world for this. It's unfortunate, but somebody always has to pay a price before we move forward. And it's unfortunate that that has to happen. But, I mean, look back through history, Martin Luther King, John F. Kennedy, all these people had to pay the price for us to move forward. And in this case, it's been a lot of people had to pay a price for us to get to where we are. But I think now this country and all the other countries realize we've got to move forward as a human race, not just as individual ethnic groups.
Here, here.
Very well said. Yeah, absolutely. Well said, Joe. And, boy, thank you so much for taking some time to join us today. Always a treat to chat with you, talk baseball, hear your stories. And, boy, this was a lot of fun. So thanks so much for coming on with us today.
Hey, you guys, anytime you need me, you know I'm available. So thank you.
This baseball season, catch every pitch at Longneck Sports Grill. Each location has 4K TVs, so you never miss a game. The menu is so extensive, you can get something different every time you visit. I love the wings. And no place in Northern Kentucky has a better beer selection. Locations in Wilder, Hebron, and Richwood. And when the weather is warm, there's nothing better than a warm spring night on Longneck's outdoor patio. Longneck Sports Grill, this baseball season, stay late, come often.